So I've been asked to speak about Ma'at, and I wanted to read just a little piece from one of my favorite scribes. I love ancient Egyptian scribes, and this guy was a sixth dynasty scribe, and his name was Ta Hotep, which was the piece of Ptah. And he wrote this invocation to Ma'at. It says, "Speak, Ma'at, do Ma'at, for she is mighty. She is great and endures. Her value lies in her use. Those who have Ma'at in hand are blessed by her. Ma'at leads one to sacredness." Okay, so I thought I'd break that down and try to figure out, well, what is Ma'at? And over the years, there have been many definitions of Ma'at, but I have come to understand Ma'at as natural law. And so Ma'at is eternal and cannot be broken because that's simply what Ma'at is. Okay, it is truth, it endures. We can try our best to do a little dance around Ma'at and manipulate this or that. And sometimes that's not always what we need to do because Ma'at, following natural law, Ma'at leads one to sacredness. Okay, so I think it's important to remember that when the Pharaoh was crowned, he vowed to follow Ma'at. From the time he was born, he was raised as a child to believe and enact Ma'at in everything that he did. And he leads his people to Ma'at, to sacredness by following divine order. So there's this really beautiful image that's in Abydos where you see the Pharaoh Seti the First, and he is bowed in his knee, and he is, I believe, before a statue of it could be what the goddess Sekhmet, and he has in his hand a little statue of Ma'at, and he's holding it up and he's offering Ma'at to her, and the little dialogue bubble around him says, "This is Ma'at. This is the truth and the foundation of the universe, which you gave to me when you asked me to become king. And at my death, I give it back to you, and I have not changed it one whit." And so that indicates to me that he hasn't tried to break the rules, go around the 42 laws of Ma'at. He hasn't put his finger on the balance to try to get it to turn out the way he wanted it. He really went with what Ma'at asked him to do. She is the foundation. She is the plinth stone. In fact, her, if you look at a hieroglyph of her, let me just show you what how you write her name. Okay. This is how you write her name. All right. So we recognize that there's the feather of Ma'at, which we understand is the ostrich feather. It's very light. It catches any motion in the air. It knows which way the wind blows. But this plinth up here at the top is the foundation stone upon which every single god or goddess stands. It's the stone that was created when Ptah blew his breath and his word of light over top of the waters, and the stone rose up after the vibration, and the stone rose up. Okay, and so this is Ma'at, the foundation of everything. Okay, so we get to meet her at the end of our life. We're born into her hand, just like she is being held in the hand of the Pharaoh. And we get to meet her at the end in her hall, where she's with Osiris, and our heart which is the seat of consciousness, is weighed on the balance of Ma'at. And it's weighed against the feather. The feather, it should be light. I like the word light. The feather should be light. It shouldn't be a dark feather. It should be a light feather, right? It is like this brilliance of everything that is. It's all of the vibration of the universe. And our heart should be light like that, because our consciousness is actually made of light. And if we understand that consciousness is light itself, then it makes sense that the secret of Osiris becoming Ra, which is what the Book of the Dead is sometimes called, is actually about becoming light and turning your life over into something that is enduring and is receptive to the winds of divine essence that blow across it. It is eternal. And so that little feather is going to, you know, it's going to vibrate slightly in the wind, and it creates a ripple. So you can create good ripples or bad ripples in your life, you know, because that little feather is always going to do its thing. Now that feather, that ostrich feather, is also held in the fans of the fan bearer. You know, you see those images of the Pharaoh's son carrying the little fan, and it's got ostrich feathers in it. And it's the emblem of a sunshade. Okay, that creates a shadow, right? But how does Thoth or Toth, how does he understand truth? Is that he knows it is a balance of light and dark. When he lifts his wing up and he's looking up under the shadow into the water, he can't see it for the light, because the light is too bright. So he's looking into the darkness, into the shadow, and there he can see the fish at the bottom of the river. And so he's able to look in that stillness, in the darkness, to the truth of something that is hiding there in the darkness. There's that magician's maxim that if you want to hide something, hide it in the light, because it's so bright you can't see it. Okay, so the shadows are actually necessary for us to understand and discern truth, because we have to know things in opposition to each other. We have to know things in opposition to each other. Let me think. There's something I wanted to say on that, so hang on a second. Oh, and so what that means is that Ra and Ra is on the side of Set. In fact, Set drives Ra's boat, okay? And Osiris is in the underworld, but he's becoming Ra. And so this whole thing about the struggle between yes, no, passive aggressive, positive, negative, it's all part of natural law. You're never going to get to something that's all pretty, all good. You know, there's no angel food reality. Ma'at is the truth, and it is light and dark. Okay. You were going to ask me a question, Mitch or Lori. So what would you like to ask me based on what I've said so far?
I'm intrigued by this notion of the lightness of the heart. In China, they have a maxim, let your belly be full and your heart be empty. So that whole notion of the upper body opening to heaven and the middle being in the world of relationships. Mm-hmm. And how can we learn from Ma'at to keep our heart open and empty and disemburdened without detachment, but through engagement?
Right. Well, I think that's a really good, let your belly be full and your heart be open and empty, is really what I was talking about, the polarity of light and darkness and heaven and earth, and that you have to have both of those things. It's you have to have the Osirian nature, which we'll say is like a earthy nature. It's a sensual nature. It's living in a natural world. And then the opening into light is the raw nature. And this, you know, seeing heaven on earth, being able to become raw while you're in a physical body is actually the task. It's not that we do it after death. We have to do it while we're alive, you know. And to see that everything is full of that emptiness of light. We're just empty space, all of us. We're just molecules roaming around. We don't actually really have any form. We're just molecules. We perceive it because that's what we think of it as. That's how we perceive the light and darkness of our actual vessel and our temple. But I think that if we, an Egyptian scribe would tell you that it's a great thing to continually write the Book of the Dead, because you're continually learning the Book of the Dead, constantly studying and reading it and using it as fuel and transformation. All of your experience becomes fodder for the fire that is ultimately the light. Okay, so Osiris is part of that fodder. You know, there's an interesting play of words on the highest spiritual body, which is the Ak. It's two syllables, A and a KH syllable. And the Ka, which is a KH and an Ah, which is the body or the lower plane. So the upper plane and the lower plane are an anagram of each other. They're the same. Ka and Ak are the same thing. They're just flipped. Okay. So within the body, the light already exists. Okay. We are just perceiving it as other because we are mistaken. You know?
I want to ask you about the relationship between Sekhmet and Maat.
Okay, Sekhmet stands upon the plinth. She stands upon Maat. That is her foundation. And so while she may be the goddess of the roar, sometimes I think I call her the roar, the passion, the she's the goddess of creation and destruction. She is both those things. And Maat is both of those things because she represents the law of opposition, the law of positive and negative, of rhythm and balance. And so Sekhmet is with Ptah, and those two are, she's the active principle and he's the receptive principle in that case, in a way, because he speaks the world, and he's totally mummified, but he speaks the world into being, standing upon his plinth. And so he is mind, you know, he is like the great mind that wills itself into being, and it cannot will and speak itself into being unless that will of Sekhmet is married to him. Okay, so those two are what we would call the word of God and the will of the gods. You know, the god and the goddess are the same. And Maat, if you're looking at the tree of life in the mental plane where these two energies are located. So you have at you have Ptah in the position of Rin, or the word is, I believe it's Hesed. Am I correct on that? Okay. And then at Gepara, you have Sekhmet, who is the will. Okay. And so those two together join down here at Tiferet, which is the heart, or Ab, or Nefertum, the perfected being that is binding all of this together. And Nefertum is the embodied Ma'at, because he is the perfected being.
Once in a meditation, I heard that the blue lotus is the birth canal of Nuit.
Yes, it is. Totally, totally. I believe that. Well, this is my book. Okay. All right. So I'm going to read from it. And just a little bit right now. Okay. One afternoon, as grapes were ripening, I stood in my field. I heard death fingering the lyre among the wheat. I laid aside my work, gathering what I knew and loved. Clothed in the skin of a priest, I hurried toward light, bearing the light within. Toward the unknown world, I bore the world that I had known. I was a man of Egypt, going to the river often to behold the gods who dwell in the rushes, who dwell in the frogs and in the herons. In my hands, I held the divinity of colored stones. And in time, I learned to handle the delicate hearts of men by discovering fragrant cedars, date palms, and hawks. I discovered life. I burned incense in the temples, but offered only myself, for nothing else was mine to give. Then one day, I visited the tomb of an uncle and found myself lying there among the spices and the linens. That is how I left the garden of this world. That is how I entered the heart of the mountain. I had wondrous dreams of bright hawks soaring through dark corridors. At the well, I met a blind woman who called me son. In the temples, I stood so long, the priests gathered, asking, what brings a man so far to sit and stare into the air? I want to see behind the veil. Go back to your fields, old one. There are no secrets here. And they laughed and left me to thought. For several years, I came and went in the temples, praising the gods, staring into the face of the statues. And then one afternoon, I don't know why, perhaps the sun shone on me. A priest led me to the room of secrets. And I saw a young girl spinning strands of flax and an old woman baking raisin cakes. Through a window, I saw a man plowing his field, struggling to upturn a stone and calling to his stubborn donkeys. A hawk circled overhead while two children tossed a small fish back into the river. I moved to speak, but the priest held his hand. You must be silent now. You are staring into the face of God. You must be silent now. You are staring into the face of God. And I wept with joy. Though I'd seen my life before that moment, I knew it differently. From then on, I sowed barley and walked under trees with wonder. I stumbled once and fell and then sat laughing in the road. Two boys rushed from their houses to lift me. Old one, where do you live? We'll carry you home. And I stretched out my arms, flinging them north and south, east and west. Here, I said, I live in the houses of perpetuity. One day I died and was wound about with linen, myrrh, and gum. My wife wept and my children sang. They poured spices and tears over my chest. The village elders circled me with earth. They laid copper necklaces in my tomb. returning precious earth to earth. They left me in the mountain for some days, and then I rose and uncovered myself, shedding skins like a snake. I was naked and new. I left bones and rags hidden in the dirt, and I walked the corridor toward light. Then I came to this desert. Before me, 1,000 souls rose from the sand like gods. Together we walked the wasteland. Together we crossed the bitter lakes. Naked, we entered truth. And I stand before you now, having seen the ghosts of the long dead, the unborn, having seen skeletons and children, having seen the blue starlight filter through the outstretched wings of a bird. Before you, I stand, a whole human speaking. I made a long journey. I did what I thought was right. I've come to see the gods. And then a snake rose from the sand and coiled about my ankle, hissing. Fantasies all. What gives you the right to make demands of the gods? I speak in truth, I said. Not to humor you. Dead men have no need of pretense. What I seek is truth. Light beyond light, beyond light. There are those who will tell you a different story. Who is to say which is right? But this I know. What I've seen with the eye has been fantasy, perhaps. But what I have known with the heart has been truth. The snake observed me. He motioned toward the door that opened into the air. If that is so, can your heart name the name of this gate? Being, I said. And the land on the other side? Creation and destruction. Pass then, Osiris, he said. And the snake withdrew. And the multicolored birds gathered, circling in the dark, gathering me, lifting me up. I stepped through, and nothing changed. Yet I had entered heaven, still myself alone on the desert at night. I walked while winds scoured the sand, and in the distance, a jackal howled at the stars. So that is from Awakening Osiris.
Thank you.
You are welcome.
I was reading not too long ago about the ostrich feather. Because I woke one morning, I thought, wait a minute, I've never seen any ostriches associated with Egypt. Like, you know, I haven't seen. And so I thought, where do these ostrich feathers come from? I didn't actually get very far with that. However, what I did read, which I thought was fascinating, was some thought that the association with the ostrich feather, as opposed to some other kind of bird, was because apparently the ostrich feather is the only feather that side to side, top to bottom, is equal.
It's the tree of life or the
land. And I was like, and then once that came through, I was like, I don't really need to know much more about that ostrich.
Isn't it interesting that there is actually a hieroglyph for an ostrich? In the same way that there are hieroglyphs for giraffes, but they were not known in Egypt unless they were carried from the interior of Africa and brought in. Otherwise, they weren't known. Although the hieroglyph of the ostrich with his long stretched neck. It's one of my favorites. It's the hieroglyph for clairvoyance or foretelling, because he can see so far away.
Huh, it makes me think of a lot of Hathor's neck.
Yes, yes, yes.
So Normandy, what's your take on the capital M Mott, little M Mott, Mott with a little between the double A's?
Right. Well, I think Mott with the little between the two A's is actually the difference between a hard A, a soft A, and a hard A. Okay. Mott. Okay. So that's the little is to make it a hard A. And when it's capitalized, it is the goddess herself. But when it is not capitalized, it is, we'll say, the foundation or natural law or the truth that comes from the goddess. Now, you sometimes see it with a Y, and it's doubled, Ma'ati. And that means the double truth, or the truth is more than one thing. Sometimes you even see it with three seeds. So it's like it's growing and the truth is more than one thing. And I think that that's a really important concept, because so many people say, I'm looking for the truth. Oh, I found it. I've got the truth and you don't have it. Ah, not so, right? The truth is always more than one thing. And you're really honoring the goddess when you can recognize that the person that you may be disagreeing with is also speaking their Ma'at. Because the truth is more than one thing. It's an interesting concept. I like the idea that it's more than one thing. Because anytime I thought I was looking for something and I found it, I always found that there was another step beyond that. So I like the other step beyond the Ma'at, because Ma'at with a big M embodies all of that. She's eternal principle and she embodies everything. She is, she's masculine and feminine and every shade in between the human experience. She is all kinds of love. And she is all kinds of willfulness. And she is the power behind every single name of anything. We name it, we bring it into existence.
Well, we're here to see how Ma'at is as a being and as a way the universe is organized, and as a way in which we can act with respect toward each other.
I think one of the most important things that we can do is to remember that there are 42 principles of Ma'at. And just as there were, you know, like 10 commandments, the Egyptians believed in the Ten Commandments, everything except thou shalt have no other gods. Theirs was thou shalt have all the gods. but I think that of all of the principles of Ma'at that I look at, the ones that strike me as most important for us, I mean, yes, we know we should love each other. Yes, we know we should honor, you know, another person's reality with respect. But the one that has been forgotten so much and needs to be recalled right now are those laws that have to deal with how we treat the earth itself. And she has a number of those. For example, she, you know, an ancient Egyptian would say, I have not dammed the river. That was one of the negative confessions. That meaning, I have not tried to stem the flow of a divine being, because that divine being is happy the river itself. I have not tried to steal the nourishment that would come from that flooding river going into the land, because that's how it fertilized. I haven't tried to steal it so more of it goes over to my land, because that's stealing it from my neighbor. Now just think about what that high dam has done to Egypt. It has prevented the nourishing waters, the alluvial dirt that would come down from Ethiopia and Kenya and meet at Khartoum and go flooding through the sand of Egypt and fertilize it for thousands and thousands of years. That's how it did it. And then what happened is that they dammed the river and there was no longer any natural fertilization. So they had to create fertilization. They made fertilizer to make the land work. And well, when they did that, they used all the hydroelectric power that they had created from those dams. They had to take that energy to make the fertilizer to put back into the land. I mean, does that make sense to you? You know, it's a ridiculous process. So anyway, yeah, that's one of the things that I think about when I think about, you know, taking care of the earth. I have not polluted the water. That was another one. I have not polluted the water. Well, we can't say that anymore. You know? Yeah. So it's not just our relationship with each other, it's our relationship with the whole planet. Yes, each other, but also the whole planet.
Yeah, and in Ma'at, those, I mean, it's like there's no separation, right? The healthy you is the healthy community is the healthy planet.
That's right.
And the separation, this false separation, really dams the waters.
And it really seems to me a system not where we need to diminish ourselves, like in a lot of Judeo-Christian and even some Asian traditions about, you know, sort of right. diminishing the self and diminishing the body, is our job is to be truly ourselves and to embody that and to support others in being themselves, because each one being dynamically themselves is what helps the whole system work together. We can't make the whole balance just from our side. We have to support the whole system being mobile and dynamic and healthy, because we and the system are interlinked.
Yeah. And recognizing that not every being inside that system is the same, that each has its purpose, you know, and so living in Ma'at is to let someone else live out their purpose. Now, there comes that moment where, you know, there's something that's not right in the system, you know, and we all have seen that and felt it. And the trick becomes how to use the will of the divine to move through you. And that's what the magician learns to do, to move things through accessing the will of the divine and the power of speech or vibration, you know.
Well, thank you for being here and manifesting Ma'at in your unique way.
Thank you. I love you guys. I'm so happy you're doing this. And I'm glad that you have so many people attending this wonderful event. So thank you so much.
Love you, Normandy.
We're always in touch.
All right.
Take care. Bye-bye.